You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jason and Jamie. This is episode 176, and we are doing the second part of a conversation on dealing with conflict in marriage. And we have, again, back with us, Sean Von Bargen, who's a Christian counselor, pastor, and most importantly, a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ himself, here with us. So Sean, we ended the conversation last time talking about brokenness that we bring into marriage and the conflict that that brings about. And I wanted to start off with really two different questions, but I think they're very much associated with each other. And that is in relationship to expectations. So not only do we come into marriage with the baggage, the trauma, the issues, or even just the pre-thinking from our family of origin and all those issues, but along with that, we come into marriage oftentimes with expectations of what marriage looks like or what it is or who does what, or, and you know, you consistently see time and time again the largest drivers of conflict in marriage are very much expectation related things, right? How we use money, how we engage sexually, you know, those kind of things that are brought in. But even who does what, who's responsible for what aspects of home life or taking care of kids or making money or paying bills or, you know, any of those sorts of things. And really associated to all of this stuff, expectations and trauma going into marriage, I think that the question of spiritual warfare comes into play as well, because I don't necessarily think in the context of, you know, two genuinely good people that want to be good husbands, want to be good wives, I don't think all conflict is just purely expectations or trauma or brokenness or any of those sorts of things. I do think there's a powerful role that spiritual warfare plays. So how do you help couples walk through those kind of areas and issues of conflict?
Yeah, certainly expectations definitely have a big role to play in the things that come up between people. Paul Tripp has a study called What Did You Expect, where he outlines some marriage issues that come up. But he outlines the idea that only 99.9% of our problems originate with the idea of expectations. So just a small figure of the things that we deem to be problems. And really, you know, there's this breakdown between expectations and hope that I think that is a big distinct factor for people. And so expectations just tend to be really rigid. You know, I expect that I will have a good marriage. I expect that my wife and I will get along. And what happens is that anytime those expectations aren't met, right, then you have a disappointment, you have a potential conflict, you have some sort of discourse that breaks down things from the way that you desired them to be. And that's the problem with expectation, is anytime that reality comes in underneath it, then you have a gap in there. The bigger the gap between expectation and reality, the bigger the emotional issue, the emotional response, the bigger the problem, the conflict or whatever. But hope, of course, I hope that my marriage will be good. Of course, I hope that my wife and I will get along. And hope has flexibility in it. Hope has grace in it. And so there's this difference between like rigidity and flexibility that comes into play with there. And of course, you want to have a fluid relationship, and that goes back to a little bit of what we were talking about, I think, last time, in that people grow and change. And so it is a fluid relationship. Our relationship with God is a fluid relationship. We do have some truths that we cling to, that God says he'll never let us down, but people let us down. So, you know, they're not absolute truth. He is. And of course, that's okay. We're hoping and building towards that stuff. We're refining ourselves that way. And so expectation can be a big one to try to unpack for people. You're trying to get them to let go of like those rigid things and move them to a place of flexibility. And a lot of that has to do with fear a lot of times. And that can go into that trauma type of stuff that you're talking about. Like they fear if, you know, they bring something in, or they fear if they're disappointed now, what will that mean about the future? You know, then if I can't trust now, then I'll never trust in the future. And again, that's just that's a really rigid thought that impacts people. And then they're bringing that forward into the relationship, and it's not really accounted for. And so you're working with individuals to reorient back to hope and restoration and redemption and these types of things, so that they can find some flexibility, so that they can fail, because they're going to fail. Like, that's just it. Like, part of growing in your relationship, in your marriage, and even with God, is that you will fail, and that you have to be willing to accept God's grace. And when you stumble, and move back into that. And it's no different with our marriage and other relationships either. You're going to disappoint somebody, but that's not the end of the world.
One of the questions that came to my mind, Sean, was, what about cases where, because we are prideful human beings, what about cases where one of the spouses just does not see their role in the conflict? And basically is constantly saying, no, it's not me, it's him or it's her. Well, how do you help people see their own fault in the marriage conflict? Because I think that just knowing the nature of humanity, and also what the Bible says and my own experience, I see that coming up a lot.
Yeah, that's a toughie, man. That is a tough, because you're trying to really poke on somebody that, you know, that probably has some good data, for one. Okay, a lot of times, unless you're talking about somebody that is really a narcissist, okay, like an actual narcissist that is completely unreflective of their role in anything, and won't take responsibility, you're talking about a lot of times somebody that has a lot of good qualities. They're passionate a lot of times. They have a lot of good things that other people have promoted and pat them on the back for. And so you're talking about pride, like, in lots of ways, that has been reinforced by other people about how good they are, how well of a communicator they are, how much they care for their spouse, these types of things. And then they've come up with a result that in their marriage where things haven't worked out the way that they thought, because, well, I'm such a great person and I do all these things good and everybody tells me so, and yet here is this thing in my relationship that doesn't match the data I've collected over time, kind of. And so it's got to be them, right? Because, you know, they have these other issues. They're not as good of a communicator, or they don't respond to this stuff the way I do. That is a toughie to get somebody to understand that they're still part of the problem. A lot of that has to do with enabling a lot of times. And a lot of that has to do with trying to ground them back and reorient their pride to understand that those are great skills. They are. They're wonderful, and there's legitimacy to a lot of that stuff. But that doesn't mean that with your spouse that you're as great as you think you are, because that has to do with your spouse. You know, all relationship has to do with the other person, not you. And so for all these things that you bring to the table, it's not being translated well on the receiving side of this. And you have to do the work of trying to find a way to reach another person And that has to do with humility, and that has to do with breaking out of what you may get an A plus in one particular class with somebody else, but that just doesn't translate over necessarily to another person in a different class, so to speak. You know, science and English go a lot hand in hand, and then at some point they don't. You know, and I find that that's really hard to work with somebody like that, because they really do, like I said, they do have a lot of things usually that are going for them, and it's such an enigma to them why this doesn't work with their spouse. And if they can move through that, if they can accept that somehow, some way, that the mystery of their relationship doesn't call for the skills that they have, and that they need new skills, then they usually will move through that okay. But they have to understand, if it worked out, if they were nailing it as much as they wanted to be, then it would have worked out. Most people don't focus on the things that are working for them. They focus on the things that aren't working for them. And then most people, because we just love to do the same things over and over, we just keep trying the same things over and over. Your brain actually likes doing the same thing over and over. It doesn't like to be challenged. And unfortunately, that's not the way the world works, or life, you know. And so getting somebody to buy into that can be a process, but it's a good process.
Yeah, I mean, I think of even, you know, folks that, unfortunately, even counseling, you know, going to counseling has a bit of a stigma that it's an unfortunate stigma, because really that means I'm open to help. I'm open to getting wise guidance here when I'm like everybody else. I'm a frail human being and I need people to speak into my life. That's what going to counseling is. And yet some people will see it as, oh, but then that means we have a problem and I don't want to admit to having a problem. And even getting people to that point sometimes, I imagine, can be a bit of a problem, because then you have one spouse who's like, yeah, we need this. And then the other one's like, no, we're good. We just got to work through it on our own.
Yep. Totally. And, you know, both can be right. Like, you know, people are afraid of problems, though. We buy into the idea, which is really anti-biblical, because nowhere in the Bible is it talking about like, yeah, take this path and remove suffering from your, you know, the line ahead of you. Like, at no point are we going to do that. But even if we recognize that as a reality, we seem to think that when it shows up, that means something negative about us. And God's really, he's really gracious to us. Like, he tells us that, look, this suffering that you're going to endure here for a while is for your betterment. It's for your character. It's for endurance to go through other things ahead. And somehow we don't take that and translate that into these moments either, you know, because we just would prefer to avoid them. I mean, in all, like most people, me included, like would like to avoid any type of hardship if possible. But it doesn't move us very well. You know, we get fat, lazy, and, you know, just idle. And that's not healthy, turns out.
I think part of that, too, is just settling for second best, in a sense, you know, where you see couples a lot that they're like, well, we just didn't marry that well, so this is as good as it gets. And look at the couples that, you know, are actually doing the hard work of seeking the Lord and applying his word, you know, in a real practical way, and actually trying hard to be the husbands and wives that God called them to be. And they look at that, you know, of course, they don't see all the work, right? They only see that, like, oh, man, they're so happy. It's so good. It's like, well, we just can't even be that. And you're like, that's the most lazy conclusion, you know, you can take away from that sort of thing, to be like, I can't be that. It's like, by the power of Christ, yes, you can. Yeah. But it means you have to, yeah, stop doing it like you've always been doing it.
Yeah, it's like chores, right? Like, nobody, you know, if I'm sweeping the kitchen, that's okay. But, you know, when I first learned how to sweep the kitchen, like, mom was critiquing the way I swept the kitchen, you know, slow down, get under the eaves, like make sure you sweep the whole kitchen. Like, oh, you actually have to pick up the shoes and move them so that you can sweep the kitchen. Like you're doing a lot of learning in that process, even though somebody's giving you feedback. Right. And when it comes to growing in our relationships, it means receiving feedback. And, you know, while I didn't appreciate my mom telling me to go back over my work as a kid and move my shoes and go sweep again and try again and do these things, we're talking about growing in our relationship because it's a living, breathing thing between two people, and we have to be able to receive feedback. And that doesn't, you're like counseling is a lot of like, hey, they're just telling you something. That doesn't mean that they don't like who you are. That doesn't mean that it necessarily is a problem that they can't live with. It doesn't mean those types of things. You're putting on an ear to hear that, hey, maybe this is an idea to just work out better. Maybe this is just the way I handle things. Maybe it's just observation. Literally, sometimes it's just observation. Oh, that's interesting. You don't do it that way. Like, that's not necessarily criticism. It's just an observation. But people, because of our own insecurities, because of our history, because of our expectations, those types of things, like we really grow into a place where it's no longer healthy to do that. That takes a lot of work. It's taken a lot of work in my own marriage for my wife to understand when I would get home from work and want to just go take a shower and decompress, that if I didn't say hi to her because I didn't see her, that wasn't like a personal slight and I wasn't mad at her. I just literally didn't see her and wanted to go clean off the grime of the day. And that was a problem. That was a conflict until it wasn't anymore. And nothing necessarily changed other than her accepting that I wasn't personally trying to upset her and ignore her. I just needed to clean up and vice versa, that, you know, that just because I came through the house didn't mean that I couldn't go out of my way to make sure I made eye contact and say hi. Like, we both had work to do on that side. It wasn't like it was her problem or my problem, because it was our problem. It's our relationship. If we want it to survive, then we have to do something about it.
I think too, along with that, and we kind of touched on this a little bit in the last episode, is that tendency towards absolute thinking where, you know, oh, I'm upset with my spouse over this thing, and the more I stew on it, the worse everything gets, right? So I go from, okay, he came home from work and he didn't say hi to me, and he never says hi to me, and he never cares about my feelings, and he, you know, and it becomes this huge thing. And I've seen this a lot. It seems like when you talk to couples a lot, you know, it's like, oh, she never, you know, this, and she never that, and she never, and you're like, so basically your wife's horrible and you hate her. Oh no, I didn't say that. Well, you did actually say that, essentially, right? By what your broad, you know, broad statements that it's like, well, okay, I guess she does, you know, encourage me a lot. Oh, I guess she does help me a lot. I guess she is a really good mom. I guess she is a really good wife. You know, it's like, okay, so really you just have this problem that you're trying to work out. Now it's a manageable. So how do you help couples do that? Just deflate the untrue thinking, right? Get back into biblical mindset of we focus on the truth, and you know, we walk ourselves back from those places of making it a much bigger thing than it really was.
Yeah, a lot of times I'm trying to convince them of the power of those statements, right? Because your brain really does do whatever you tell it to do. And when you pull up an absolute and you state it as a fact, your brain responds like it's a fact. It gives you all the data that backs it up, but it does it by grouping everything. So you take something like, she always does this. And what it says is it pulls up the file of your wife and it says, okay, here's the data on your wife. And all this data is exactly the same. You said so. And so since you pulled all the data and this is what you said it all is, it all is. And it creates a response physiologically and psychologically that starts to change and mar everything you believe about that person when you speak that way. That's really dangerous. And most people will automatically just push back on that and they don't believe me. And so I'm trying to convince them of that it really is. Your brain does whatever you tell it to do. And so usually I pick on dreams. I will tell somebody like, hey, so you've had a dream before, right? And you wake up from a dream happy, mad, excited, scared. Was it real? And they're like, well, no, it was a dream. I was like, yeah, but your body physically responded, physiologically gave you a shot of adrenaline, woke up startled, you feel nervous and scared, you like have all those things going on physically because you told your body that it was a legit thing until you told your body it wasn't a legit thing. And then after that, it resettled because it turns out you were sleeping on the couch and you weren't falling off a mountainside. Like, in trying to get somebody to just poke a hole in that type of thinking and be helpful for getting it started, and our brains really do like back up whatever we tell them to do. And it's just not that great most of the time. And so that type of thinking, absolutes or automatic negative thoughts is what I typically refer to them as. John Eldridge refers to them as silent agreements. And I've heard a couple other things there. You know, my wife and I often talk about them like silent agreements. Most of them have to do with like, oh yeah, she's mad at me right now. And that's a silent agreement that you make with yourself. But then you start responding to your wife like she's mad at you. And she might not be mad at you. And then all of a sudden you're walking around acting weird because you're avoiding her because you don't want to make her more upset. And she wasn't even mad to begin with. And before you know it, you've created a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now she's weirded out because you're acting strange. And now she's mad at you because she doesn't know what's going on or frustrated by the situation. That's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And a lot of that has to do with that type of thinking. A lot of times couples will be so anxious to return home because they know that, especially if they're going through a rough patch, they'll psych themselves up like, oh, when I get home, you know, he's going to be, we're immediately going to get in a fight and, you know, he's going to jump down my throat and da 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 da. So you've already decided on the outcome and you're just driving towards home. And the first thing that looks anywhere close to that when you get home is what you've prepped for. And then it's on. And would it have happened if you hadn't been prepped for it? Hard to tell. I mean, because we can't just predict the future, but you've certainly set the stage for it to most likely occur.
Yeah, you can definitely... I mean, I can, even while you're talking about this, I'm thinking of all these examples in my own head of times I've done that, just not even just, you know, in the context of marriage, obviously, but just relationships in general, where you take one little thing and you decide it means something and then end up creating an actual problem where no problem actually existed. And then later on, you find out, you're like, wow, okay, now I feel really foolish because I found out that this wasn't actually a thing. I just thought it was, you know, or whatever. And so, yeah, it's a good a warning as well, right? Don't be a fool and let your emotions lead the truth rather than let the truth lead your emotions. I do want to ask, you know, about the topic of prayer and the role of prayer in the context of healthy marriage.
Yeah, so what, I mean, there almost can't be anything more intimate. I mean, it's the most intimate thing that we have with our God, and it's how we communicate to God. It's how we get through our life. It's how we find meaning and endurance and strength and all the things that we petition our Holy Father for. And then to take that into your marriage, it's super intimate, right? You're talking about bearing yourself together as one flesh before God for this. And man, it is a super powerful way to engage your marriage and to strengthen it, to both lead in that area, to both pray for each other, to pray for the things that you're both concerned about, to pray for the strength and endurance of your marriage, to find humility in it. Like, I've found all these things present when I'm praying with my wife at the foot of our bed. We typically pray every night before we crawl into bed. And then we also have just recently also found a way to start praying in the morning. Our mornings are a little bit more chaotic together, but the prayer tonight, you know, the prayer at night before we crawl into bed, even just praying for God to come in to our bedroom, to connect us physically, to put us on mission spiritually and for his kingdom, to pray for us as parents, which doesn't have to do with our relation, our marriage, but it is an aspect of who we are. And so to pray for that, to pray for wisdom and guidance there, all these things, man, what a powerful way to seek forgiveness in front of your spouse. Like, I've really failed here, and to hear the confession of your spouse, or, you know, in front of you, that can be humbling as well. I mean, those are really personal, intimate times, and intimacy is what makes up your marriage. Like, the more intimacy you have, the stronger your marriage is going to be. And that's just not physical intimacy. People get really confused with intimacy. They think it means your sexual relationship. Now, that's a small aspect of intimacy. It is a piece of it for sure, but sharing fears and dreams and hopes and desires and all those things, that's intimacy with somebody. And you do all that in prayer. Like, those, that's exactly where that stuff comes out, is in prayer, you know. And what a great thing to add to your marriage to strengthen it. I can tell you that at year 17, my wife and I decided that we were going to change up our prayers and pray for God to just draw us closer to each other. And that because we were like, yeah, we're like totally solid and this is great. And why not just see if God can like make a blessing upon a blessing here? And the next 6 months were some of the, I hate to describe it as rocky, but in our context of like what would be rocky for us, this was like the rockiest 6 months of like digging out some stuff in our relationship that we didn't even know was in there. And God walking us through that and removing it and drawing us even deeper into intimacy with each other in relationship where we didn't even think that was possible. Like, we literally didn't think that we could get any more closer than we were. And God said, oh, you think there's a ceiling there? Oh, no, there's no ceiling here. And he just ripped it right off, you know, of what we expected was a top out for us. So it is like continued to open up our ease of having difficult conversations and just sitting in them so much easier, just being able to trust that God is in it with us, that we have had conversations over the last year or two that they would have sent us into a tailspin at year five. And I attribute a lot of that to just prayer and the power of God. Like, there's no other explanation for being able to handle that stuff.
I think obviously when you turn to Ephesians 5 and you see the gospel centrality of handling all things in marriage, what better way to love your wife than to pray for her? And what better way to love your husband and honor him through prayer? I think that's such a powerful thing. And what you just shared about how it uncovered things, good in the long run, but it could bring up some things that just were under the surface. I think that's an important thing to that you brought up, because sometimes marriages could feel like they're coasting along, and lo and behold, there's this thing brooding under the surface that you were hoping never got noticed, but it, sure enough, it can't be ignored forever.
Yeah. And like the silent prayer, right, is that exactly what you're saying. I hope this never comes out type of thing. But again, this goes back to avoidance and belief of what God can do in the midst of suffering, of uncovering these things and bringing them out. And this is a leap of faith. It's a test of faith. It's walking through these things and keeping your eyes fixed on God when something like that may show up that is more detrimental than something else. Like, hey, I cheated on my high school exam, or something like that I never wanted to tell anybody. You know, maybe this is adultery. Maybe it's pornography. Maybe it's I have a crush on somebody else and I don't know what to do with it. I mean, those are all legitimate things that they come out when we're talking about things that people don't want to share with somebody else. And there's other things too. I mean, it doesn't all have to be around that. They're just big things that are present in a lot of relationships. The reality of those things is it impacts the majority of them. And so when you're talking about those things coming to light, prayer is going to be a big aspect of trying to get through that. And you can fast track your healing process if you're united and crying out to God together to get through that. That's why Jesus sits in the middle of our marriage, like, so that we can trust in him when we literally may not trust in our spouse on the other side of him. But we can continue to walk towards Christ and come back to gospel truth, come back to that hope and grace in him, and have him clasp our hands around our spouse when we may not feel like doing it on the other side of that, because those things can be tough when they do surface for folks. And at that point, you may want to literally go find your pastor or go get a counselor and work through some of that stuff. But you got to be committed to the process of digging that stuff out when it shows up and not buying into this is it. That everything that we've done before is worthless. Going back to that absolute type of thinking that, yep, I guess our marriage was built on nothing. No, that's not what it means. It feels that way. That's legit. Like, it can feel very hopeless with some of these things that may come out with folks. And some of this is just like, some of these things, like I said, may not even be things between the two people. It may be like a trauma of somebody's past. There's alone, well before the relationship ever got started, something that they've experienced and they've shared it, and now it's in the relationship openly. And people sometimes don't know how to handle that type of stuff, and that can impact their relationship. But here it is bringing to the surface so that healing can be found. It's just really hard for people to sit in there and want to heal. We prefer, again, to just avoid all the healing process because we'd like to pretend that there's no death going on. Really, we're talking about putting to death all these fleshly things and trying to find restoration. And God's going to bring us towards a real restoration, things better than they were before. I mean, that's what our restoration is. It's better than the way it was before. He's not rebuilding it to the same. He's rebuilding it better, bigger and better, you know. And we just have to commit that that's what God says. That's what he says is true. We can trust in that and to put one foot in front of the other, even if that's tough.
Well, thanks again, Sean, for joining us. And yeah, it's been really helpful. I know for all of our listeners, it's been super helpful for Jamie and I just to hear you walk us through some of the counseling issues that will come up and how you approach those for marriage. But I know this extends beyond marriage because this is relationships as a whole, and how God's grace can invade those conflicts that we will see and will experience. No relationship is immune from, I would say, the deeper you get to know somebody, the more you're going to find conflicts arise. And it's good to work through those in a biblical and faith-based way, as you've just laid out for us. So thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.